enjoy the race?
Yes.
Yeah, that's good.
F*** me, what a race. That's what I say. I've got 97 notes. 97. At least I didn't fall asleep this time.
I don't see how you could have fallen asleep after that.
Everyone, welcome to edition 177 of the NRF1 podcast, your Formula One podcast straight out of Norfolk, UK. We're also on Future Radio in Norwich and brought to you by our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up for the game for free by visiting nrf1.uk or gpro.net/nrf1. I am sports journalist Michael Bailey, and we are here at Archant Towers in Norwich to review what may well prove to be one of the greatest Grand Prix ever seen. In this pod, we will review as many of the key talking points from the Azerbaijan Grand Prix as we can fit into half an hour, wipe the egg off our faces again, ask if road rage is now permitted in F1, and as ever, dish out our Of the Weekend awards. Joining us on the pod this week for the extravaganza, Damon Hill fan and Mustang owner, plus hashtag point whore, Richard Baxter.
Good evening.
Yes, I did remember. Budding F1 correspondent, Callum Springle.
Good evening.
And budding F1 engineer, Callum's brother, Dan Springle.
Good evening.
Gents, goodness me, I hope we're all well. Azerbaijan Grand Prix, me. I mean, literally, I spent all last week slagging it off, Callum, pretty much, in our podcasts. And then it's now basically my favourite track ever. What a race, incredible.
Yeah, I know. It's just, I think it's just such a challenging track. I mean, it's a bit half Monza and half Monaco. But we didn't really get to see that last year because I think everyone was just so conservative. I mean, the GP2 race was manic. I think that probably left quite an impression on all the drivers, and probably didn't want to take too many risks diving up the inside. And the corners are quite 90 degree most of the time, so you don't really have a lot of room to try and shove people over the edge and assert your position if you're trying to overtake. But we've definitely seen quite a lot better a race this year. A lot more risk taking. You know, you can see that already on the first lap. So even though the cars are a lot wider, you can definitely still overtake.
You maybe couldn't hear it, but Callum's face written all over it, massive excitement from a fantastic race weekend. I mean, what made it such a great race? That's the issue. I mean, it clearly had it had everything, but there were also, you know, the safety cars. They kind of did away for virtual safety cars for the race and decided just to do them all with actuals, and that helped bunch up the field. We had random things happening, like whenever has Lewis Hamilton's headrest come up? I mean, and that had played such a huge part in it. We had Vettel red mist, which had no bearing on anything. I mean, why suddenly in that race, as well as then the, you know, four abreast cars racing down the straights and cars just driving into walls when they didn't need to.
And to be honest, the cars, I don't know, it was just the characteristics of this circuit. They seem to be much more closely matched than they have done in the past. I mean, if you look at the results, there was only 13 cars that finished, but only Grosjean in 13th was actually lapped. And that's saying something if both McLarens aren't lapped.
Hey, come on, they got f***ing points, Rich. Holy mother of f***balls, what a race. It did have everything, Dan. And, you know, are we over-egging it? Am I over-egging it? Am I swearing too much?
No, you're not swearing too much. You're not over-egging it. I mean, that's got to be in the top 10. I mean, I saw on the Sky coverage yesterday, someone said, is it within the top 10, top 5 since the millennium? And it's definitely within the top 10. But you probably have to say it's within the top 5 of this decade. So, yeah, you're not over-egging it. I mean, I'm lost for words after that race. On lap 1, I thought, yeah, it's kicking off already. But no one would have seen that race coming from a mile off.
97 notes and, you know, as I did joke earlier, falling asleep during Canada. I managed to stay awake this time, thank God. It's hard to know where to start, but I guess we break it down into the probably the most overreaching moment in the Grand Prix, which is what it does for the title challenge. Lewis Hamilton and Sebastian Vettel neither getting on the podium, yet so intrinsically important to the race. And the remarkable sight of the spat under the safety car. I just found it remarkable, and I'm really keen to get your thoughts on it, Rich.
It was ridiculous, really, but once it happened and the red flag went out and they were all in the pit lane, I was really egging them on to have a fight. I know that sounds bad, but I mean, I'm going to draw this comparison a lot tonight, but the 1998 Belgian Grand Prix in Spa, of course, in Belgium.
tends to be the case.
But yeah, Michael Schumacher had a kind of similar moment. He crashed into, you know, the red car crashed into the silver car. both went into the pits, and the red driver went to go and punch the silver driver in the face. I mean, when was the last time we saw something like that happen? But both drivers in the pit lane seemed really calm, which was really odd considering not on track. Vettel seemed to be quite a madman, to be honest.
It got dissipated quite quickly in the end, and I think Vettel played it very, very straight. I mean, I love this, and I guess a lot of the British media, if they're a big Sebastian Vettel fans away from hit this country, they'll be like, wow, it's Lewis's fault, he you know, he was doing something that wasn't right, which, as has actually been proven, he didn't do anything wrong because he kept a constant speed. And as we know, Vettel has been given 3 points on his license, so that could mean that he gets maybe a stiffer penalty than some were thinking. But I have no real issue with, I love Vettel for doing it. I think it's brilliant. I love that he reacted so hot-headedly. I shouldn't say this, should I? But I love it. I mean, that passion, that complete brain freeze he seemed to have at that moment is brilliant, because what a talking boy, what an amazing thing to see. He'll get peanut, well, he wasn't harshly peanut, I mean, he should have been disqualified as far as I'm concerned. You can't just drive into someone. It's brilliant that he did it, but he can't do it, so he has to, probably should have been binned off for the race, and he won't probably get the penalty that he's supposed to have. But by the same token, I just love him for it.
Yeah, I mean, I think if he'd caused damage, I think there would have been more of a severe penalty. Other than just a little bit on the back of Hamilton's car on the floor. But what's really interesting is that there's so many talks about how Formula One is in such a bad state and things. The amount of people who turned on to watch that race, and who I know who always say every race is rubbish and absolutely loved it, it's brilliant to see the fans. And what's really happened there, now that's happened, where there had been quite gentlemanly conduct between the two drivers and they were praising, really respectful of each other, this is now going to go down to really dirty, really straight fighting. It could be the Senna-Prost battle that we saw those years ago,
hopefully with cars as well rather than just in the pit lane. It's interesting you touch on that. Maybe it was fortunate that Formula One had it on free to view TV, because had it been on Sky, no one would have been able to just go over and switch over and watch the race. I completely agree with Lewis Hamilton, Dan, in terms of what he was saying. This is a disgrace, blah, blah. Look at the kids. We were going to watch that and think, well, I'll just drive into someone if I'm a bit f***ed off, which is clearly a really important point. The fact that it's dangerous, it would have been dangerous if they'd been going quicker, I'm not really buying, because Seb wouldn't have done it if they'd have been going quicker, would he? Wouldn't have been able to catch him up.
Well, no, exactly. And to be honest, it actually takes some sort of skill to be able to bump wheel to wheel and not cause any damage. So kind of hats off to him in that regard, but I wouldn't, what's the word, like, when you I wouldn't encourage that sort of conduct. And a few years ago, I think it was a couple of years ago, there was one now Red Bull junior driver in F4 behind the safety car, overtook basically the whole pack to ram into one of his rivals and I think he got a whole year's ban from the MSA for that. So I saw on Twitter yesterday that people were calling for that sort of punishment, but that does not compare to running behind the safety car while the safety car is still out behind the train and straight on ramming into someone to take them off. So I think that was a fair penalty. I don't think he should have got a disqualification, and I think the stewards were right with their decision.
Yeah, I quite agree with that. I think the only real incident you can compare it to, and it's embarrassing enough for Vettel anyway, but you can only really compare it to Maldonado.
he went for the big guns.
He did the same thing to Perez in Monaco in 2012 in practice and got a 10-place grid drop. So he's lost positions half the way down the grid, and Vettel lost, what was it, 7 or 8 places. So he's lost about half the grid. So the universal key to arbitration is consistency, and that's certainly a consistent way of applying the rule.
Beautifully put. I'm happy with that. And I guess it all moves on, and the big question, of course, is what it means for the championship battle going forwards. I got the impression that Seb was like, well, you know, it won't affect our relationship, it'll be fine, and they do get on quite well. And I think Lewis is more like, well, I ain't speaking to him now. And I guess he's probably got a bit more freedom than when it was a battle between him and Rosberg to just do that. And you clearly are hoping it's going to erupt from here, Rich, in a safe way.
Yeah, definitely, because wouldn't it be good to see these two, you know, rivals going as, obviously years ago it was McLaren Mercedes, so I'm still counting that as a Mercedes Ferrari battle. But it's one of those things we need to see. You know, you saw Michael Schumacher and Mika Hakkinen have it all for several years running. If Hamilton and Vettel get that going now and they keep it the next few seasons, the rest of the grid catch up as well. You know, they were watching over their shoulder. But also, there was a moment Vettel said in his post-race interview, he said, "Oh, Hamilton's done this before. He's you know, had a history of doing it." But I seem to remember before Sebastian Vettel in, I think that was Abu Dhabi, going into the back of Ricciardo, possibly in a Toro Rosso under the safety car, when he got to Leclerc on the throttle, he just went into the back of him. So I think he's got a bit of a history of it as well. So, I mean, we know what his radio rants are like as well after last year in Mexico. So
gold is the word you're looking for, Rich. Gold. F***ing gold.
The Russia. Drove into the back of me in the f***ing rear. And
I'm not doing the impression again. And I suppose it's remarkable that Vettel was calm this time on the radio. It's almost quite funny. What dangerous driving did I do? I don't know. I can't remember driving into anyone. It wasn't me.
On the team radio, you could hear in the background when he was moaning about something. I can't remember what it was now, but you could hear in the background Maurizio Arrivabene going, "Just tell him to talk about it after the race."
Classic. Subtle. Right, well, DT was moved to such excitement by the Grand Prix that he took the time to record his own audio and send it to us. Here's what DT had to say.
Hello, NRF1 podcast listeners. It's DT here. I'm gutted I can't join the other guys recording the podcast today. So much to say. What an amazing race. But I just thought I'd make this little recording and give you some of my highlights, feedback, and some of the emotions I've got after watching what has got to be the race of the season. This one will definitely go down in the history books. I think you will agree. First off, what a shame for Hamilton. Amazing on Saturday, amazing qualifying, had the race pretty much in the bag and let down by a very bizarre scenario. If his thing hadn't come detached, then he definitely would have won the race and definitely had more than enough pace. The whole incident with Vettel and Hamilton during the safety car period on the restart, absolutely atrocious behaviour from Vettel. I can't believe he did something so petulant. You know, he got away very lightly with a 10-second stop-go penalty. He deserves a race ban, if you ask me. It's out of order. He's a professional. You have to act like a professional. And just because you got a little bit off, you can't throw all your toys out of the pram and start driving into other drivers. Luckily they weren't going very fast and not much happened, but it's just absolutely out of order. Big shout out goes to Lance Stroll. Amazing result. I can't believe it got pipped on the straight at the end, but still fantastic result. And also amazing results obviously for Daniel Ricciardo. Obviously he was well down when he started the race, and actually I think he fell a lot further back as well, so he managed to charge through. That was an amazing result. And the same with Bottas. I mean, he was right at the back of the grid, a lap down, yet he managed to, on the final lap, come in second. How amazing is that? I think Ocon had an awesome race. I think Perez and Raikkonen, I think they could have had amazing races had they not had the problems that they had. So overall, there was some amazing driving, such drama, such excitement, you know, red flag, multiple safety cars, all of that sort of stuff going on. And it's just made it, for me, one of the greatest races I've seen for a long, long time. I'm sure that's probably a little bit of word vomit, but I just had to get involved one way, shape, or form with the podcast. I hope you've enjoyed what I had to say, and hopefully catch you on a podcast at some point in the future. Bye-bye.
Awesome work, DT. Now, if you want to make sure you never miss an episode of the NRF1 podcast, then get subscribed through your podcast player of choice. Just visit nrf1.uk/podsubscribe and you'll find the link for you, be it iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Spreaker, Stitcher, Acast. And of course, if your link isn't there, then let us know with an email to nrf1podcast@gmail.com. And I'll just flag up episode E174. We had a fantastic chat about the safety monitoring, audio monitoring system. Thanks again to the guys from Indie Sports Car Podcast. It was a brilliant interview. If you haven't heard it, episode 174. It's really insightful and something I think we all learned something that day, and we want to keep track of that because I think it's a really big thing that needs to be spread, and hopefully it'll get picked up in Formula One and beyond. Right, let's fire up the Baku NRF1 pit stops. F*** me, what a race. I'm going to say it again, boys. me, what a race. So where are we going to start here? Williams, Lance Stroll on the podium. Now, much like Baku, Lance Stroll is like my favourite driver now, and I'm not usually up for this whole fickle changing blah blah blah, but what I saw from Lance Stroll, completely different to what we've seen before. Out qualifying Felipe Massa, racing like that on a track that so many, I saw it mentioned on the Checkered Flag podcast, Nico Hülkenberg still waiting to get on the podium in Formula 1, had a great chance this weekend, hit the wall. Lance Stroll didn't hit the wall, and he came so close to finishing second, not even just on the podium. Even Valtteri Bottas was happy that him overtaking him on the line meant that he still finished on the podium and didn't remove that from him.
Well, he would do if it's his old team, wouldn't he?
True, very point.
I think Stroll's performance came a lot because of, I think he had some time with Rob Wilson, who's essentially like the driver coach. And if the drivers have anything they want to iron out, they just go straight to him. But he also had a private test in a 2014 Williams at COTA. So supposedly he's gained a better knowledge of setups and what difference they make. Although his dad would tell you differently, but to be honest, I think he's just trying to blow smoke up his ass.
I mean, that's interesting. We talk about him, the money being really why Lance is here, but ultimately if you spend the money well and you develop yourself, which is kind of what's happened, you can show you've got some real talent, and however much money gets you so far, it's not going to get you around a track like that for 51 laps and finishing on the podium.
No, exactly. Well, money breeds talent, there's no doubt about that, but you do need to have, to even get to Formula 1 in the first place, you need some talent. And credit to him in a way, really, because he had such a young mindset at the beginning of the year. You could tell that he was kind of just going for it, hell for leather. And now he's kind of got more of a wise head on young shoulders. It certainly seemed that way anyway. Whether it'll carry on for the rest of the season is a different matter. But he's definitely matured. And while you could say that he lucked into it, it's probably the more cynical way of looking at it. He made the most of it and he didn't falter. So yeah, real credit to him really, because he's done a good job.
I mean, it did all fall into place for him, but he was in the position to take advantage of it. That's what I find so impressive. And don't get me wrong, up until, well, after Canada, I said he won't get another point. That was a flash in the pan. He just rocked up and I thought he was lucky in Canada, and it was just like, holy shit, I mean, the point's amazing. Everyone was really excited. But this, I think through qualifying and then this, that's completely different ballgame.
Yeah, I mean, all the driver coaching and things that we can talk about, I don't think that takes anything away from that drive. It is 18 and 200 and whatever days, and that was such a mature drive. He kept his head down, just kind of kept out of trouble. And when it comes down to it, that's what you need to do. We've seen so many drivers over the year. You know, Prost was called the professor because he'd do just what he needed to get the points. And you think this guy, you know, he did what he needed to get on the podium, which was his aim. And it was astonishing. I'd say there's at least 10 drivers in that race who could argue that they should have won. And I mean, so many of them, you know, failed because of their cars. So many, well, a few of them failed, like you say, with Hülkenberg, who hit the wall. And he was really set. He was really good position. And it's astonishing, you know, this young lad. I'm so pleased for him, though, because we've gone about the Ricciardo's smile and how happy he always is.
I'm so bored of that now. But, yeah.
But Lance Stroll was so happy. You could see, even when he parked his car next to that number three, you could see his cheeks through his helmet. And he was so grinning his head off.
Grinning his head off with his cheeks.
No, you could see because of his eyes. And the way. But, yeah, you could just see his mo. And it was so nice to see someone so emotional. You've got Raikkonen, who's on the podium I don't know how many times. So bloody miserable, couldn't give a shit. And you got this lad, he's just finished third and he's jumping around, he's going wild with the champagne, he's enjoying it. That's what you want to see from your drivers winning races. And credit to him, I want to see him do it again. I want to see him winning and everything, yeah.
Which is the thing, he'll win us over. He definitely will. Now, we are sitting next to a Sega Mega Drive, and Mega Drive was, I think, how it was termed for Stroll's performance. And as you said, Rich, he's 18 years, 239 days, the youngest podium sitter in a rookie season, which I guess is because Max was on the podium in his second season. So, I mean, that's a bit of a convoluted stat, actually, now reading about it. But, you know, whatever. Great stuff. Well done, Lance Stroll. Well done, Williams, because Felipe Massa was a little bit unlucky, really, not to feature. He had a fantastic race in so many ways before the car gave up on him. I mean, it was quite unfortunate because that car was bouncing around. Can you imagine how painful that was being in that car?
Seeing as dampers are known for being my speciality in F3.
Oh, here we go. What happened, Dan? Take us through it. No, don't. We've got other things to talk about.
But still.
Write a blog on it.
Yeah, write a blog on it. Yeah, that's true.
Can do. Dan's.
We'll put Callum's name on it. Dan's Damper Diary. We haven't got time for this. Anyway, yeah, it must have been painful bumping up and down with no damper.
Yeah, with the spring being compressed and extended, there's if you've not got anything to absorb that energy, then you send the wheel loads crazy. So yeah,
that's enough of that. Red Bull, they actually won the race. Daniel Ricciardo won the race. We're the only ones to pronounce it correctly, of course, still. And I mean, it was hilarious. Daniel was just sort of laughing at himself, really. I don't even think he could believe it, and he just keeps lucking out. Meanwhile, Max Verstappen is just bang out of any kind of luck. I mean, he was looking really good at the start of this race. I mean, it doesn't mean anything because anything could have happened afterwards. But
I think I said after Canada that they're more like tin cans on wheels. They're not really like that now. I mean, they kind of are, seeing as they've completed less racing laps than McLaren, even. So
is that right?
Yeah, seriously. 20-odd laps difference between the two.
Ah, that's woeful.
I think that watch engine needs a bit of a service.
Oh, just bin it off and get like a proper one that doesn't need a watch. Next off, we're going to stop at Finland, which is obviously a garage in the pit lane, because of Valtteri Bottas's wonderful recovery. I remember making a note after lap 8, which is when Julian Palmer's misery was ended through his car, and his dad was in the garage. First time, by the way, I've noticed that they're actually on his race helmet, Julian Palmer, says MSV, so he's actually sponsored by Snetterton, effectively. So there we go, we've got even more vested interest. It's a shame he's not, he's just bang out of luck at the moment, and maybe other bits. But yeah, after lap 8, Valtteri Bottas was 20th, which was bang last, and Ricciardo was 16th, and of course one and the other finished on the podium at the last stick. Kimi Raikkonen was livid at what happened and probably blamed it on everything that then went wrong, and rightly so in a way, apart from his puncture. Valtteri, was he squeezed? Was there much he could do on their first lap shunt?
It's racing. You get to a corner, one of you's on the outside, one of you's on the inside. Bottas bounced over the curbs and kind of, you know, understeered effectively into the side of Raikkonen, but it's racing, it happens.
Which I think is a bit how the stewards deal with these things at the moment, really, isn't it? Which is great. I'd much rather be like that.
Yeah, exactly. But like the fact that Bottas just careered straight into Raikkonen in the first place was because of the curb. And obviously, if you're in midair, you can't turn, can you? So it even happened in, I think it's F2 qualifying, Sergio Canamasas, better known as Spanish Horse, in our house.
Spanish Horse.
That's what his name translates as.
Spanish Horse. And give us that name again.
Sergio Canamasas.
Spanish Horse.
So, yeah, he, going up, I think it was turn 7 and 8, the 7-metre wide corner. Yeah, he had a bit of air over the curb and went straight into the wall. And I think even in the F2 race, there were a couple of incidents at turn 2 where the driver on the inside clouted the curb and went straight on. So yeah, it's a racing incident. There's not really much you can do about it if you're squeezed up that far, but maybe for next year the circuit organisers might want to actually look at that.
No, just let them crash, I say. Let them crash safely. They don't like each other, do they, the two Finns?
Yeah, they're drawn to each other like magnets. It's like one's north and one's south.
Eloquently put, I love that. Force India, so they're having a good time of it, aren't they? After the shenanigans in Canada. I mean, to me, Esteban Ocon's fault all over. I thought he just squeezed Perez and he had nowhere to go. And actually, Perez was the one who got done for it, really, because Ocon came home to seventh, did he? Somewhere
sixth.
Up there?
Sixth. This really annoyed me because it wasn't sorted out from Canada in the previous race. They were playing around with team orders and then they were told they can race. You need to have guidelines. Like Mercedes, they said, okay, we're going to let you race as long as it's clean. If it's dirty, we might have to get one of you, you know, might have to get rid of one of the drivers.
But surely they don't have to explain, you can go racing, but don't your teammate.
But then how aggressive Perez was in Canada with Ocon, and we were all saying, oh, he needs to be a bit more aggressive, needs to go for that move. He went for that move.
Yeah, but then he it up.
Well, I think it was a similar kind of thing where he hit the curb as well and kind of ran wide. It's the nature of a street circuit as well, though, isn't it?
Well, that's exactly what Otmar Szafnauer said. Thanks for the help for the pronunciation there, Callum. Yeah, that's exactly what he said. It's racing, but that's racing. It's like Nico Rosberg trying to intimidate Lewis Hamilton and then just driving into him by accident.
And this also brings me to another point from Spa 98. We had the Jordan 1-2. And Damien Hill was straight on the radio. As soon as he saw the danger behind, big fan, you might be able to tell.
We are chasing him down at Silverstone, by the way, Damon.
But I tweeted him and kind of trying to get him a job at Force India, because he said on the radio at Spa, you know, I'm going to put something to you here. You need to listen to this. If we two race, we could end up with nothing. But if you make the decision that we don't race, we could get a 1-2 finish. If they had got on that team radio at Force India and just said, be careful, there's a lot of cars, keep it really clean, we could be on to some serious 1-2 finish here. Because they could have been, they had the pace, the way the race was going, they were up there. It could have been a 1-2 finish, in all honesty. And if they just had that one person who, even one of the drivers came on the radio, was sensible about it, even if anyone in the team had just said something, they could have said, wait. They could have forced it out, yeah. Get some space, work as a team to cut through, wait until the end. And yeah, I mean, I suppose their biggest rival right now is Williams. And of course, you look what happened there with Stroll getting the points.
Well, you did. And they are their biggest rivals. But I think Force India got double the points that Williams have. So they're absolutely miles ahead at the moment. So it would have made such a difference. I just think with Ocon, we were really bigging him up. Such an assured start. And we're now seeing what tends to happen, which is the experience is kicking in. The sort of concentration goes from making your first races to trying to step it on when you're not ready. And I think that's what happened. He probably tried to force the issue and ended up driving into his teammate. They weren't the only ones. Sauber did it as well, didn't he? The Sauber boys. I think that was Verlaine driving into Ericsson. Was it that way around? Or was it the other way around? I can't remember. They were intertwined in slow motion when I saw it. So,
yeah, I think with the Ocon incident, you can say what you like about team orders. But to be honest, if he wasn't going to make the move on Perez, someone was going to make the move on him. So the only real way you were going to prevent that was just, you know, let them race, but say you have to give at least a car's width. And he didn't. You know, because the wall narrows between, or the wall was narrowing, so there was going to be less space for Perez. So if he left another half a metre, it wouldn't have been a problem. Yes. And they probably could have won the race.
Because there's runoff the other side of the curb, which he'd gone onto, and then, of course, it narrows down again. But, of course, Ocon was there, so that space was shrinking.
McLaren! They got some points! Oh, how exciting! They weren't really excited, were they, Dan?
On Ted's notebook after the race, on the Sky coverage, I think there are a couple of mechanics having a bit of a dance and carrying each other around. But apart from that, they didn't really look all that excited. But it was 2 points. Actually, when was the last time that every single team scored a point?
It's probably last year.
Last year, was it?
Yeah, because that was one of my predictions that came true.
Oh, damn it.
Don't worry, we've all been there, Dan. Don't worry about that. Haas, I wanted to touch on. Do you want to say anything more about McLaren? I can't be asked. What was it? Something Alonso said? We could have won this race.
Yeah.
Well, if everyone else had been wiped out.
Well, if he had another
car,
another 100 brake horsepower and a battery, if he basically had an engine that worked, he could have won. I think even if he had a Renault engine, he could have got up there.
Well, I will say, wasn't it brilliant watching him, Seb and Lewis all battling properly over position for just 30 seconds? But it's like, and good old Fernando, he's still got it. It's not his fault, is it?
His line in qualifying as well, because there was a bit of a mix-up, and he said, I don't think they realise, actually, that we are going flat out. We're not just going slow.
We're on a quick lap. Get out of the way. Hang on. Someone's got... Is he racing? Is this a quick lap? I can't tell. Classic. A little word for Haas. Kevin Magnussen's engineer, the most excitable engineer I've ever heard. Of course, it then all went a bit belly up. Where did Kevin finish in the end?
7th. He got 6 points.
So he did really well. It's just the problem was he was running in second and his engineer was like, oh my God, you're second. Just keep calm. You can... Oh, third, it's all right. You're third. Just keep going. Oh, and then we never heard from him again.
But it's points for the team. You know, new team last year. They've come into the sport. They've got points instantly. And for all the brake problems they've been having, they've done well.
Romain Grosjean. Now, he was on the radio really early in the race saying, look, if my brakes are dangerous, get me out of here. Am I going to be harsh and saying, what the f***?
Well, the sensor went wrong. They saw something on the data that said that the brakes were dangerous, but they found later on that actually they weren't and he could have kept going. But it's just the same thing every weekend. Surely if you get him a decent car, then he could go quicker than Magnussen. You know, we've seen him in a decent car in the Lotus as being a potential race winner, and it's sort of wasted talent almost at the minute.
He strikes me as a driver who needs everything to be perfect. He needs to have complete trust in what he's got. And this is probably the key issue, because the very top drivers at that point would be like, well, I'll keep going. If the brakes fail, I'm going to know about it. But I've just got to keep out, get this all done. And it's like, no, just tell me, get me out of here if I'm... And I don't know what it is, but obviously we Formula One fans, most of them will accept and enjoy the danger element. And they hope obviously nothing bad happens, but that is a part of the sport. And when you have someone who's kind of crying it off on the radio... But is that really harsh? Because, you know, it's his life. I'd probably be the same. Get me out of here. I might, you know, whatever.
Well, I can understand his viewpoint, seeing as he's got a family. But, yeah, as a racing driver and as his job is just to try and drive the thing flat out and try and go as fast as possible. But then being a racing driver and knowing racing drivers, you also need to let them have some confidence. And if you've not got that trust in a certain element of the car or the car's performance, then you're never going to get 100% out of a driver in the first place. So yeah, that's something that they need to get on top of. But it always seems to be Grosjean, it never seems to be Magnussen that's having the problem.
Oh, yeah, but that goes back to pre-season, because I'm not breaking any confidences, but Kyle, who did suggest that maybe Roman wasn't entirely happy with the brakes that they were using this year. So I don't know, that may well be an ongoing issue, but there we go. Rich.
So the one thing I would say is, on that circuit especially, if you're doing 220 miles an hour and your brakes don't work, there's going to be...
Do I still beep?
Yeah, if you want.
Then I will. I apologise if we've missed anything in terms of the pit stops. Literally, 97 notes. That's all I'm saying. Right, you can follow us on social media, although social media has been a little bit quiet recently. I do apologise for that. I'm sure it'll rise up again very, very quickly. But if you want to follow us for the gold, quality, not quantity, that's all I'm saying, you can follow us. The handle is @TheNRF1, and that will take you to our Twitter, Instagram and Facebook pages. And of course, next week, we've got our 3 podcasts in 3 days, and you can use social media to tell us your thoughts, opinions, questions and more. I'll make sure I go through them all before we get into the recording ahead of Austria and all our podcasts then. And you can email us. We love reading those. nrf1podcast@gmail.com. We can include all those next week. And the website, of course, nrf1.uk. You'll find blogs. You'll find Callum's race review, which will be there by the time you hear this, almost certainly. It did a great 5 things we've learned from free practice on Friday. I don't know how many of those came off. I can't remember now. But we also got those on the EDP website. So good. Was that good? You enjoy that, Callum?
Yeah, good. Thanks for that.
My pleasure. We'll do stats, the latest prediction league standings, once I've got those up to date. I'm well behind now. And betting tips from Kyle. I don't know how he got on at the weekend, actually, but I'd imagine any kind of tipping and betting was completely out the window, given what happened at Baku. Right, it's time for our of the weekends. What a race, boys. I've still not got over it yet. Right, Rodolfo Gonzalez, driver of the weekend. If we've already talked about them, we can sum it up pretty quickly, but I know who mine is. Rich?
The man who is named after a walking weapon, Lance Stroll.
Wow. Amazing. I think that's probably going to be our title. Dan?
Well, that's a tough act to follow, so yeah, I'm going to have to say Lance Stroll as well.
Yeah, I think he strolled his way to that title this weekend.
Yes, I would completely agree. Team of the weekend?
I think you kind of say everyone, because 9 teams were in the points.
The Formula One team! Yeah! You can say that, Callum. Sorry, I'm not criticising.
Probably the team of people that decided to go to Baku in the first place.
Well, this is it. I've probably already said this once. We completely slated Baku. We're like, this is Bernie's project, and the last race was crap. But oh, Bernie was right. Dan, Bernie was right.
Finally. He seems to be quite conservative about everything else, and then he somehow manages to pull this one out of the bag. So, yeah, hats off to him, really.
It reminds me, actually, at one point, you know how Bernie had the idea of having sprinklers on track? It was like they had debris sprinklers and they were just spraying carbon fibre on there, and it was just f***ing, oh, another safety car.
Well, especially after Raikkonen's puncture as well. And then he pulled into the pits and, basically all of the right-hand side of the floor and the rear wing end plate was gone. And I was watching it, I was like, f*** me, how did you manage that?
And then Kimi goes, oh no, just change the end plate, it's fine, I'll go back out again. No, I'll be fine, no, you'll be alright.
That message was gold. But my team, McLaren, just because they managed to get a point with a lot of luck.
Being very generous there, Rich, I think. Pastor Maldonado of the weekend.
Nico Hülkenberg, I'm trying to think of another weapon analogy, but yeah, there's not one. The Hulk that sunk the Titanic. Hülkenberg, because it was a nice berg and the Hulk, yeah, that's terrible. Cut that.
Nope. That's staying in. That might be the intro. Dan?
Esteban Ocon.
As we've discussed.
Well, I've already compared him to Maldonado, so we might as well give him the title of it. It's got to be Sebastian Vettel.
Oh, honest road rage. It's funny, driving here, I came over the hill along Rouen Road in Norwich, for anyone who wants to Google it on Google Maps. Rouen Road in Norwich, over the hill, and the sunlight bathed over, like going through the old town of Baku. Just before that, some got right in my way and just brake tested me, and so I was properly swearing him. I could have pulled alongside and just driven into the side of him, but that would have been wrong, Rich.
It would. I mean, you probably have to have pulled over and exchanged insurance details.
I've got 3 points on my licence.
Exactly, yeah. But you didn't do that because of the responsible driver that you are.
Yeah, I'm a decent human being. I'm not saying that Seb isn't. I love Seb, as I've already said plenty of times today.
Is he your kindred spirit? Just for
the- yeah. Well, actually, say that. I was doing the Seb impression on the karting video. If you go onto the nrf1.uk/nrf1tube, we've got a brilliant video of us down at Ella Park Raceway, which is a go-kart on the Suffolk-Norfolk border. And I'm playing Seb. So maybe, yeah, maybe, you know, if Ped had pulled alongside me and brake tested me, I'd have probably driven straight into him in his car. So, f*** you. Deal with that. Anyway, where are we on here? And highlight. We should probably say there was a red flag in the race, because I don't think we've said that, to clear all the debris. And that was quite amusing, watching them all work on their cars. I'm not saying that was my highlight, but I mean, I wouldn't even know where to start. I just thought the four abreast racing down the straight was very indie-esque. I thought they seemed to have improved the camera angles, and we had this discussion, didn't we, before the pod, Dan, about whether that was just because the street circuit lent it to it. But for me, they are doing a lot more in terms of the TV production to make everything look quicker. I think that's really coming through. Probably the death of the virtual safety car, because David Coulthard was convinced they were only doing it, they were literally doing actual safety cars just to make the race better and bunch the field up, and it worked.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can narrow it down to one highlight, to be honest, because the whole race, there's so much going on. But actually, yes, I've got a highlight, which was suitable for me, which was in qualifying, I think, when Hamilton stuck it on pole, the fans with the Damon Hill flag in the crowd.
This is all building up to Silverstone. I can sense it now.
I've got to actually choose one now, haven't I? What do I go for? As an engineer and part-time mechanic, the appreciation of Kimi Raikkonen's mechanics actually managing to change the floor in the time of the red flag is probably my highlight.
Only to then get done for working on the car outside the fast lane, wasn't it? Something like that. There were a couple of other bits I was going to pick out on. We got to see live footage of race control. I like that. More Charlie Whiting, especially when they were sort of shouting at each other after something happened. Christian Horner, fair play for him saying that Red Bull needed patience before the race. I think he took that up quite well, given they actually won it. And a bit where David Coulthard was actually worried about his lift home when Verstappen's race ended, because he was supposed to be getting a flight back with him, and he was a bit worried he was going to leave the circuit early. Also, another thing that came out about all the cars being damaged by marshals because they aren't looking after them. And if they crash out and they're being hoisted up by a crane, the cars are all coming back more damaged than from the accident, which I think is hilarious. Anyway, highlight.
I'd say Lance Stroll's face after having the shoey. That was the facial expression of a man that has never drank out of a sweaty shoe in his life.
Possibly just never drunk. We never know, you know, body's a temple and all that sort of stuff. Obviously, I've got to mention the Azerbaijan national anthem and lady singing it in the most incredible dress, and all the parades before the race. It all seemed like it was such a highlight until the racing took hold. And that was obviously much better. So, you know, at least things happened in the right order. And I think we should just mention George Russell is going to be testing for Mercedes in Hungary. I think the post-Hungary test, George Russell from Norfolk testing in a Mercedes. Even that happened at the weekend. And Radiohead played Glastonbury. It's amazing.
I'm really pleased for him, because it's not very often you see really a young lad who's got his first season with the team to suddenly go straight in at the deep end. So he's obviously impressed somewhere along the line. And future British driver in Formula One.
I think we'll have to make sure we get a hold of him at some point. We're going to have to have a chat with him. So he's from fucking Norfolk and he's testing a Formula One car. Literally, he's more qualified than any of us. Seriously. Okay, so these are the end questions that I'm going to start asking regularly. The first one is, did we enjoy the race? Off. The second one is a rating for the race, so it'd be nice to keep track. Now, I was supposed to check what we actually rated Canada, because I couldn't remember. I think it was sort of 7 or 8. I think I probably said 7 and others were like, oh yeah, 8. So Azerbaijan out of 11, we're gonna make it out of 11.
If it's out of 11, I'm gonna give it a solid 10. Simply, I'm not gonna give it the highest, simply because we had a red flag, we had a bit of a stoppage. It's a shame that happened. I think if it just flowed better, because it would just been more entertaining, but obviously they had to clear the debris up and all that.
I mean, how would that race be topped? What would you get from a race that's better than that? To me, that race had literally, I couldn't think of one thing that race didn't have that you'd want.
A British winner.
A Norfolk winner.
A Norfolk winner. All right, so what we're saying is to get to an 11, it has to be Baku, but with George Russell winning the race.
Yeah, exactly.
Me. Well, we're not going to use 11. We're not Spinal Tap here. We're just not going to use 11. We just make 10 louder or 10 higher, whatever. Okay, that's fine. That's for 10.
By
Schumacher. I was gonna crank that one up to 12, but yeah. Now we're banned from going to 11.
No,
I think
no, don't listen to here. Don't listen to Ridge.
I'm gonna have to give it a 10 then.
Oh, you listen to Ridge. If you said 12, we could have averaged 11.
12 is reserved on my part for Canada 2011. Always. Yeah, okay. But
so the next time Jenson Button wins from the back of the field with tied 5 laps to go.
Yeah. Well, 1 lap to go. But yeah, I'll give it a solid 11. I think I don't really agree with Rich, to be honest. If you take out the red flag, then it takes out everything that happened thereafter. And that was the highlight, was everything that happened after lap 20.
Well, I'd give it an 11. I honestly, that's basically an average of 10. So roughly in my head, isn't it?
10 point something.
10.5. 10.5? We agreed on 10.5. I'm glad we all did that. That's going to be a very useful thing to do in future. A final question. Who will have had the biggest smile on their face heading home on their little private plane?
The walking weapon.
The walking weapon.
The walking weapon.
The walking weapon with his mega drive. And that is the NRF1 podcast. What a shit. What, f*** me, what a race. Still can't get over it. Next week. You know the drill, I'm sure. 3 podcasts in 3 days. We're getting in a proper routine with that now. It's killing me in terms of workload, but that's fine. It will include our Austria preview and predictions. Yeah, good luck following that race, Spielberg. But of course, it will all start with our F1 news review featuring your audio and social media submissions and questions. So get those in. And if you want your voice to be heard on the podcast, simply press the red button over at nrf1.uk. Pose us questions, anything you want us to discuss, any racer, any driver, any race, any team, any f*** up, any wondrous thing you've seen in the world of F1, we will discuss it at your behest. Until then, it's goodbye from our guests. Goodbye from Callum.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Dan.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Rich.
Goodbye. And can I add another challenge for the listeners?
Of course.
They should send us their nicknames for the drivers, like the walking weapon. They should do their own versions and send it to us, and we can have a competition.
What a brilliant idea. And then we'll make one of them stick.
Absolutely.
Or whichever. I love that. Great idea. Yeah, get those in. We'll bring that up properly next week. Remind me of that, Rich. So thanks very much to our proud partners, Grand Prix Racing Online. You can sign up to their game at gpro.net/NRF1. You never know. The engine algorithm formula may come up with a race like Baku every week. Who knows? And of course, thanks to Future Radio. This has been the NRF1 podcast, and that was the race we will be talking about for as long as we live, as long as F1 lives. Formula 1 boring? You can write off. Or I'll drive my car into you. We will be back quicker than it takes Sebastian to blow his fuse. Until then, goodbye! Mic drop.